I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Are you serious?
Hello there, this is How to Kill an Hour. My name is Marcus Bronzy. Oh my, what a year we have had. 2020 is now behind us. But man, it's been an interesting one for us, haven't it? We've had some ups and downs, haven't we? As a world, as a country, as a podcast, we've had quite a few ups as well, I've got to be honest. And I think like the most positive way of us coming out of 2020 and going into 2021 is by picking out the best things from How to Kill an Hour and celebrating them with you, the listener, and thanking you, really, shall we say, for sticking with us through such turbulent times. I mean, we've had a great year. When it comes to podding, I mean, listen, there's more of you listeners, which we love, and are going to have more great content firing out for you in this year, 2021. We also won a podcast award, a British Podcast Award, which was very nice as well for our interview skill set. And we actually had a small celebratory set of episodes, episode 100, where we went through kind of the best bits of our show over the last years with each of our presenters. So when it kind of came to us doing a celebratory best bits of 2021, we didn't want to repeat too many things or repeat anything at all, actually. So what we've decided to do is collate our best interviews from 2020 and share them with you. So that's what this episode and a following episode are going to be all about. So yeah, I'm Marcus Bronzy, your host for How to Kill an Hour. Thank you in advance for killing some time with me. And episode 342, we actually had two of the gentlemen from Top Gear. We had Paddy McGuinness and Chris Harris, and we had a chat with them just before they launched this new season of Top Gear, which was absolutely phenomenal, and they are continuing to create more Top Gear. I think, if I'm honest, Top Gear had a wobbly few years, really, where there were some great presenters on it and there were some not so great presenters on it, and it didn't really have the chemistry that it needed, really, I think, in all episodes. But now they seem to have really created something that clicks and works together. But this was all just before this new season of Top Gear dropped. So I had a chat with Chris Harris and Paddy McGuinness. Freddie Flintoff was, I think he was getting his hair done at the time, or he was in makeup or something, just before they had a big screening in Leicester Square. And we actually sat in Leicester Square in the theatre that they were going to show the screening in, and had a chat about, first things first, the chemistry between the gentlemen. So here's me having a chat with them about their chemistry. I'll be honest though, Chris, I feel like you get bullied a little bit sometimes by Freddie. I mean, we've seen him almost rub some mud on you. We've seen him slap a melon
almost
on your head.
Yeah, almost.
Yeah.
Oh no.
Yeah.
He does.
Yeah. Put a melon on your head. Even I think his balls connected with your head.
Yeah.
What
yeah,
other parts of his body are going to be touching in the next season?
How many other people have been teabagged by an international rounder in Ethiopia?
They look sweaty as well in that. You look pretty warm.
And he's getting old as well, so they're starting to really, really droopy. The whole bullying thing just makes me laugh. When you're the small man, whichever group of people I'm in, I'm always the smallest, and the small one always takes a bit, and you get used to that. I like it. I thrive on it because ultimately I'll always win because I'm not as stupid as him. So I'm very happy with the balance, and I expect to get a bit of grief. I get my own back a bit in this series as well.
Oh God!
So don't worry about it. I'm certainly not the put upon one in this at all. I mean, look at my ears. You can't see them on the podcast, but I've got normal ears. Spock to my left here hasn't got normal ears. I'd rather be small with normal ears than
bullying
with those.
Bullying. Ear shaming, I think they call that.
It is.
That'll be, that's a new one on Twitter, that. Ear, you're ear shaming me.
So there you go. Yeah, chemistry aplenty, which includes rinsing each other regularly. So there's plenty of that on the show as well. And it's fun to watch as well as the cars. But they do get up to some pretty tricky stunts during the show. And I wanted to ask them if anyone got hurt during filming.
Not so much emotionally. Really? I was very injured emotionally, but physically kind of okay, really. I mean, I'm surprised Flintoff's still with us.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, he spends most of his time trying to kill himself, and he survived this time. He had a couple of close scrapes. He went off the end of a runway lying on what can only be described as a skateboard with a rocket attached to it. And as I saw his legs start to bounce when he hit the grass, I thought, that doesn't look good.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a picture knocking around, I think. There's a green sports car and some sort of device that someone's
You were
made.
In the green one, weren't you? I was I was driving a shed at the time, an actual garden shed.
Yeah.
Fred was on this skateboard come rocket thing, and what were you in?
Skyline with 2,000 horsepower.
There you go. So, yeah, but I'm thinking of getting a sweepstake going in the office about how Flintoff's going to die. We don't know if it's going to be a bungee rocket thing. Yeah, we're going to, you know, but I'm going to get a few quid on it.
Yeah.
He doesn't really do fear in the way that we all do fear.
Yeah.
He's wired up differently, which is perfect for us. I mean, he was employed as a lab rat, and he's executing that perfectly.
I mean, he dragged you into a few things last season. There was that, you know, the
that hearse. Oh God, that wasn't a great moment, was it?
The hearse, I mean.
That was... I think that's partly his fault. I've got to be honest, because Fred's one of them people where, you know, when you go, someone tells you to put the hand in a fire and you go, you wouldn't do that. Yeah. Well, Fred would.
He was that kid.
He's going a bit faster, Fred. And he's like, gets all excited. And the next thing we know, we're upside down and the roof's crushed and we're all trapped in the car. And I'd like to think he'd learned his lesson from that. But I don't think he has.
No,
yeah, but before we worked with Fred, we never had a thing called an extraction unit. Now we do.
But you had him jumping up on cliffs, though, didn't you, in the last season as well? That's one thing, Chris. When you said, I don't like this, I am not feeling this, that kind of conveyed how scary it was. And Freddie's like, oh, yeah, go on, I'll have a go. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, he doesn't really view it the way we do. It's quite strange. I've never met anyone like that. I thought I knew fearless people until I met Fred.
No, but I think Fred's one of them where he kind of thinks, because it's on telly, he thinks it's safe. So he'll go, oh, it's all right, it's on telly. I'm like, no, but there's still like a 500-foot drop there, Fred.
Yeah.
That doesn't change with telly. They don't, when you fall off the cliff, go, caught, and the car just hovers, and then they put it back on.
Yeah.
It's still real, but in his head, it's on telly, so it'll be fine.
Yeah, when you see later on the premiere with this bungee jump stunt we've done with him, I mean, blimey, O'Reilly. But I was there that day, there were a few moments where even he thought, this is not too funny.
Yeah, and that stunt absolutely looks mental in the show. And what's great about Top Gear is you can check it on BBC iPlayer. If you're here in the UK, I think you can watch Top Gear if you're in other parts of the world, but you're going to have to find out where that's served, because to be honest, I do not know. One more thing the gentleman spoke about is their travelling etiquette. And I think you learn a lot about Paddy and Chris here.
When we're travelling anywhere in the world, right, Chris is the kind of guy who pulls you up and has a go at you because you've got a suitcase. Right, now that's you're on a plane, you've got a suitcase. He goes, look at Mariah Carey with his suitcase. I'm like, that's what people take with them on holiday, Chris.
No, they don't, they take a small bag.
He's literally a Tesco shopping bag or Waitrose in Chris's case with a pair of underpants in it. That's him.
Scandalous. Travel light and be wieldy. Then you're manageable. You can react to situations. You turn up with two suitcases, load of white linen. I mean, honestly, it's like Beyonce.
And lad like yourself as well.
That was a long time ago.
If you're going on holiday, you've got a suitcase.
Yeah,
you've not got a suitcase.
I've got the one case, yeah.
Listen, he pulled me up when I first met him because he saw me put aftershave on. I'm like, this is just what people do.
No, it's not. One bath a week and travel light.
One bath a week. Jesus Christ.
What's Freddie like? He looks like he's a bit of a classic sportsman now. Yeah, when it comes to his kind of etiquette.
I keep my eye on him because he has a style team, Fred, doesn't he?
What?
He has like a guy.
Well, he's got his own fashion line, Flintoff by Giacomo.
He's always getting his hair touched up by someone and what have you. So yeah, he's.
Let's say Fred has bought into the sartorial side of life. He likes to look good. I don't really understand any of that.
Footwear.
What's wrong with his footwear? He's got big feet, hasn't he?
No, but some of the stuff he wears in studio, these Nike trainers he wears with the big, like, aluminous balls underneath and all, I don't get that.
Well, I mean,
I mean, I've got to say, Paddy, you've got a fancy pair of kicks on right now.
Yeah, but they're just a white, they're just a white pair. They're just a white pair. Yeah, but what I'm saying is there's nothing there going on. They're just there.
Whereas Fred's have like, I think on the bottom of it, there you go. Oh, there we go.
That's underneath.
What make are they?
That's underneath. That's underneath. That's just underneath.
I've never even heard of them. That's a lady stat. That is a lady stat.
You can buy lubes with like all spikes on the front and all that. That's not me.
Terrible.
Just a nice, simple pair. I like that. But Fred wears these ones like where they've got like these mad gel things underneath and all that carry on. It must be
what,
just
air bubbles.
Is that what they are?
Yeah,
I have not.
He's big into those.
He loves the air bubbles.
They make him even taller because he lies about his height. I've never met anyone that lies about their height, downgrading it. He says he's 6'4". He's not. He's a good 6'6".
I said to him once, "What are them?" He went, "Yeezys." I went, "You're 42." I went, don't be giving it Yeezys at that age.
Also, the way these two say Yeezy, Yeezys.
The Yeezys. I'm like, you can't be wearing them at your age.
Have you not picked up any greater Manchester or Lancashire-isms then, hanging around these two guys?
I'm starting to understand the way they talk a bit. I love the fact that when the show goes out in America, they have subtitles. I'm not kidding. They both have subtitles. They have subtitles, those two, and I don't. Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, man. No, it's impenetrable, isn't it? At times, you know, when he starts talking about, that's reet, that is, that's reet.
Yeah. When we're chatting, me and Fred, and then Chris pulls us up on something, when he does tell us how it's supposed to be done properly, I do go, oh, yeah, I get that. But I take no notice of it.
Oh, that's reet, that is. I'll have a balm cake, thanks. How you doing? You all right? I think I'm doing all right, Lancashire accent. One of the other things we spoke about was what they learnt from each other during the filming process.
When you're doing something a lot, you get better at it.
You say that, but I've done two studios with you, and you still say I'm shit.
Yeah, apart from that, apart from your presenting, but other than that, yeah. But I think because you know, I always ask Chris about certain things when we're driving and what have you, or about, you know, taking corners faster, and that's, you know, you'd be daft not to pick his brains for that. But also as well, we have a lot of pro drivers you never see on camera who do, you know, they do, they're fantastic drivers. They do so much stuff outside of Top Gear. So, yeah, if you're not picking their brains when you've got a chance, you know, you've been a fool to yourself. So, yeah, I think things have definitely improved.
I can be a bit glib at this point and say that they both can drive pretty damn well. They're much better than the average driver. And you couldn't really do this job if you were totally incompetent behind the wheel. It wouldn't be possible. Although, having said that, there's probably been previous Top Gear presenters that have been hopeless behind the wheel.
Oh,
shots fired.
Oh, controversial.
Yeah, do you feel like your studio game or your banter's better now rolling with these guys?
No, my banter.
Do you know
banter,
what a bomb is yet?
No.
No, oh, no. Okay.
My chat's terrible according to Paddy, and the studios, when we prepare ourselves for the studios, the chat I get, we have a run through beforehand.
Yeah.
And quite often in the run through I'll have a little snipe and he always pauses and goes, "You complete mug, wait for when we're recording it."
Yeah.
And he always, standard line is another great line that you didn't deliver on camera.
Yeah. He does all his best stuff off camera. And I'm like, when it's on, that helps us, Chris.
Time, yeah.
Do it when that light goes red, do it then. But when it does go red, he just stands like that.
Hate it. Absolutely hate
it. What are you doing?
I want to sign a contract where I don't do the studio. I just cock about outside in the cars. The studio.
It's afterwards.
But yeah, that was the gentleman from Top Gear, Chris Harris and Paddy McGuinness. Like I said, make sure you go check that out on the iPlayer. Another great interviewee that we had was from a totally different world, from explosive cars to explosive wrestling. We had WWE's Kofi Kingston on the show. And yeah, at the time, he was having a great time in his career, and he still is now, in episode 341. One of the first things we spoke about before we even spoke about his very interesting way of attacking wrestling and his energy was his trip to Ghana.
It was incredible. Amazing in so many ways. It had been 26 years since I had been there last. To be able to come back as WWE champion, they're all familiar with the product over there. And, you know, they understood the significance and the joy and happiness that I felt from them was unmatched. You know, they welcomed me back with open arms. I got to do so many cool things. I got to meet the president. I got to meet the Ashanti King and give them WWE titles. Like, in what world, you know what I'm saying, are we in that we can give the president of a country a handshake. Oh, by the way, here's a title. And then to see him light up, you know, and I'm like, oh my God, like what is happening right now? Because my mom does a lot of work with the president. She works for UNESCO. So she's the one who kind of orchestrated and organized this whole experience. Initially, we wanted it to be 7 days. We don't have that kind of time, being that we have to go back and forth from shows. But we squeezed 7 days of events into 4 days. And I say this all the time, like I never felt tired. I was the energy was just so amazing to be able to uplift people and to be able to show children at schools that anything is possible. Look, there's even a Ghanaian name on this most prestigious prize in WWE and all of wrestling. Here, look, it says Kofi right there. And they're looking at it like, oh, their minds are blown. And I'm excited to see like if that moment is the catalyst to spark you, you know, to spark them to go and on and do great things and believe in themselves. That to me is the most important aspect of, number one, going there. And then also being a WWE superstar, being able to influence people. People listen to me because I'm on TV and they forget like, okay, I'm just a guy, you know, just like you. I was in the same position. And the only reason that I'm here is because I had the courage to go out and follow my dream. If I didn't, I don't know what I'd be doing, but I definitely wouldn't be enjoying my life as much as I am now. So spreading that message is so important to me because you only get one life and you need to live it to the fullest by going out and achieving your dreams. It's the difference maker, you know, between, I'm not going to say like your life is terrible if you don't follow your dreams, but I'll tell you what, it's a lot better if you do. It's a lot more fun.
Do you know what? What I love about Kofi is that he's just got such positive energy. The day that we recorded this podcast, it was like a miserable British day in Brighton. It was like crappy weather outside. Some of the other superstars were walking around and they just seemed a bit like, you know, I don't know how to put it. Just like, yo, I know it's a cruddy day, but let's just all put a smile on and crack on with the press. But as soon as we got into the room with Kofi, he was just like, hey man, what's going on? Had real good energy and it was just such a bright interview from a man who understands wrestling, has worked in it for a while, is really appreciative of you know the levels that he's at now. And I think that's kind of what makes him a great wrestler to watch. He gets the game and you know he knows how to bring excitement to it. And one of the things that he does that's very exciting is stopping himself from getting eliminated from Royal Rumbles by balancing on various things. So obviously we had to speak about the Kofi Rumble technique.
Oh, I don't even try to rank them, man. It's hard enough to try to come up with them. You know what I'm saying? I just put them out there, and if people like them, they like them. If not, that's cool too. But I saw it as an opportunity when John Morrison left the company. There was one year where he got like hit off of the apron and he jumped all the way to the barricade and like parkoured his way back to the ring. And then the next year he wasn't there. And I was like, I'll do something like that, So then fast forward a decade later, every year you have a Kofi Kingston Royal Rumble moment. This past year, though, we got some of these young guys and young women out here making it real, real difficult. You know what I'm saying? Casey, you know, is making it real hard out there, just handstanding, and she's like the incredible little gymnast who can do all these things. So I think for me, the next greatest trick would be to win. You know, all the other stuff aside, like that's the goal is to win, right? You want to become WWE champion. You want to have another match at WrestleMania. So that's my goal now. And then let all these young booties, these young kids go out there and do these stunts. But, you know, I'll probably do something. We'll see.
You know which one the kids at home were doing the most? Don't wrestle at home, kids. Yeah. It's definitely got to be the office chair one.
I mean, that got
me looking at offices like that. That had my heart.
Thinking
this could go sideways because office chairs aren't designed for
They're not. And
funny hop to office chair, man.
Yeah, and then it was funny because so Hornswoggle, when he was with the company, and even still, he's like the guy who I bounced these ideas off of. Yeah. And he's like, oh, what are you going to do this year, Kofi? I'm like, bro, I don't know, man. Like, if I come up with something, I will. If not, then I'll just get thrown out of the ring. It's not a big deal. Oh, what are you going to do this year? What are you going to get a pogo stick? Oh, and he's like laughing. I was like, huh? Wait a minute. Pogo stick, huh? Do they have anything around the ring? Can I use a kendo stick? No. Oh, the chair. I'm going to try it tomorrow. And this is literally a day before. I didn't have anything before, you know? So then I go and then I'm looking at the stuff and I'm like, oh, this is entirely feasible, you know? And I'm like hopping on it and everything. Actually, no, I started hopping on it in the hotel room and he's like, oh my God, that's what you got to do. I'm like, cool. So we'll figure it out. Like, I get a lot of credit for these things, but you know, if, Tenzai doesn't put me on the apron, then I don't get to do it. If Rusev doesn't catch me and put me on the barricade, then like, I don't get to even do that. If, the Rosebuds don't catch me and they carried me around, I didn't do anything. I got carried around and I got credit for this like cool elimination. Woods and E launching me up into the ring. Like they launched me. Yeah, I was just there standing on one foot, you know? But, yeah, it was, like the pogo stick one was dangerous. Cause then you saw like this, the chair kind of started like tipping forward. I was like, oh my God. Like, and now, and then,
thinking,
yeah.
Wow, what kind of quality office you don't, is this? Where do they put
yeah,
this?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm not sure if it's made for
I know. And then I used to work at, for Staples, which was another, and that the chair section was one of my sections in the magazine to be responsible for. So it all came full circle, you know? But yeah, that one was pretty damn. And then the chair started like rotating too. And I'm like, oh my God. Now I have to hop like backwards. I'm like, I hope this chair doesn't break. Yeah. And luckily, you know, here we are.
And see, that positivity put Kofi in an amazing place. He became a WWE champion, managed to hold it for 180 days before Brock Lesnar made short work of him by kind of hitting him with a special move at F5 in under 10 seconds. But I mean, his reign, Kofi Mania, was a real good vibe. Him getting all the way to WrestleMania was amazing. And he was just pure positivity. And obviously, we wanted to discuss that at the time.
It's been crazy going from the beginning of the year to where I didn't know what I was going to be doing on WrestleMania. Honestly, I don't think there are any plans to have myself, Woods, or E included in WrestleMania. There wasn't a plan for like a big tag team match like there normally is. We didn't have any storylines going into it. And then all of a sudden, going into Elimination Chamber, Ali gets hurt by Randy Orton. And I'm his replacement in the Elimination Chamber. Had to go through a gauntlet match to get there. And I remember getting the call. And Road Dogg, who was, you know, writing SmackDown at the time, was like, hey, we're going to have you replace Ali in the gauntlet match. Can you go for at least an hour? I'm like, oh, yeah, of course. Hang up the phone. I'm like, man, I don't do any cardio like this. You know what I mean? Like, of course you're like mentally ready and you don't say, no, I'm trying an hour. I can't do it. Give the opportunity to someone else. I can't do it. You know, you say that you can do it and then you kind of go out there and you figure it out. I remember, having Dr. Tom Pritchard as a coach. And one of the things that he made us do in FCW was have hour-long Broadways. So this was a decade ago. We were forced to get in there in the Tampa heat, humidity, sweating in your eyes, no AC in the building, and you had to be in there in the ring for an hour, one-on-one. And once you did it, it was like, man, I'm alive. I can do this. So having had that match, I had no fear going into this gauntlet match, even if it was over a decade later. I'm like, yeah, like I've done it before, so I can do it again. So yeah, after we did that, like the fans were just like so like starting to get real passionate as far as their support for me. And then at the Elimination Chamber, when it came down after I beat Randy, and then it was me and Daniel Bryan, and then everyone in Houston's like, oh my God, it's happening. And that, but just before their eyes, like this dream of Kofi Kingston as WWE champion was this close, and now they just start, everyone's coming out of their seats, you know, and that was the birth of Kofi Mania, you know. And I always say, like, it's not cool when I say it, because I don't know, it just sounds weird for me to say, but it was definitely cool to experience and watch people get rabidly behind this movement. And just real, I'm fortunate to have had that level of support from the WWE universe. Like, you, that's what you hope for as a guy, you know, as a good guy on the roster, for people to support you like that, you know. So it was crazy to have to go through that whole process. And I think when the Elimination Chamber went about, we had two more pay-per-views before WrestleMania. I forget which one came after Elimination Chamber. Was it Fastlane, I think? And then WrestleMania after that. So we had like a legit month and a half that we had to like draw people out. And initially the plan was not for me to go all the way to WrestleMania. But the more that the fans kept getting behind it, you know, the this was the direction that we needed to go. And I'm so glad that we actually decided to go do what should have been done, because there's so many times where the fans will be in such support and then for whatever reason we want to go in a different direction and we don't get to pay it off. So it was something where people were literally investing all of their emotion behind this moment. And like I said, I'm just so fortunate to have experienced that as a WWE superstar. This is what you dream about. You want to have a moment that affects people emotionally, like down to the core. Yeah. And after I won at WrestleMania, just everybody in the arena, 85,000 people on their feet cheering, crying in joy, and on social media, same thing, you know, kids crying, grown men crying, you know, in bars, and just, it was a really cool moment to be a part of. And then obviously, when you become WWE champion, now I'm just like, oh my God, they're going to take it away from me the next night. You know, like they did Zack Ryder, right? When he won the Intercontinental Championship and then he loses the next night. I'm like, oh, they gave him their moment. They're going to take it away. Because initially I wasn't scheduled to be on Raw. And then I get a call to be on Raw. And I'm like, oh, here we go. You know, oh, take it on Seth. They're going to, you know, unify the titles. Yeah. Here we go. But they didn't go that route. I was like, oh, okay. 1 week goes by. I'm like, I'm still champ. Okay. Month goes by. I'm like, all right, we're still champ. You know, 6 months later, I had one of the longest reigns in recent history. So, and I got to wrestle a lot of great competitors along the way. So that's what you strive for as a WWE superstar. You want to have the best matches. When you're the champion, you want to go up against the best. So for me to go up against guys like Samoa Joe and Kevin Owens and Dolph Ziggler and Randy Orton, Daniel Bryan in that 6 month period, Sami Zayn, you know what I'm saying? That is what I wanted to do, is to make sure that the reign itself was a good reign. So then you hit Brock Lesnar, you know. So and it all comes to a screeching halt, and that's it, you know. But at the same time, 6 months is a long time, almost to the day, you know, almost exactly a 6 month reign. And this is my coping mechanism. You know, I say Ric Flair couldn't have been a 16 time champion without losing 15 times, you know. So hopefully this is the first of many championships. But again, it took me 11 years to get here, but you just have no idea what the next step is going to be. So it is what it is, you know what I mean? It is what it is. And you do what you can with what you're given and try to make the best of it.
Another great guest that we had, episode 352, was Tez Ilias. He's an amazing comedian. He was based up in Blackburn at the time we were having the conversation. He was isolating himself. And we spoke about a lot of the giving natures of companies over lockdown during our chat. And this was right at the start of lockdown. One company that was being really given was Pornhub. Anyway, I'll let the clip do the talking.
Other streaming platforms are looking after us as well. Pornhub is handing out free Pornhub premium memberships for everyone. This was announced on the 26th of March. If you're looking for another reason to stay indoors and out of sight, the good old people at Pornhub have just given you a handful.
Oh, wow. That's
there you go.
In these lean comedy times, you got to take what you can get. And that was nice.
And I'm not even a comedian. So, bro, you know what? Thank you for giving me a bit of support there. You could have just let me sit in it silently. But yeah, that's right, man. Like, apparently, you know, traffic is up on porn sites. A lot of people are knocking it out. Like, why not? They've got a lot of time. So they're giving you 30 straight days, Pornhub.
Nice. Well, yeah. The thing is, like, it's that, or in 9 months' time, everyone's going to come, people who are coupled up are going to come out with a baby in it. So where do you put your energy?
Exactly. I mean, and I think I don't want to have these COVID kids trying to talk to me in a few years' time. Do you know what I mean? I'm not about that COVID kid lifestyle.
What's your name? Corona. Yeah.
Can you imagine there's a kid called Corona out there?
Bro, there's going to be a kid called Corona in it. So I got an email. So I have a Gmail account that I rarely use. Yeah. And I got an email from Pornhub saying, click on this link to verify your email. And I was like, I don't remember signing up for this. And I'm saying that legit. I don't remember signing up for initially you get those emails in it that you think are spam.
Yeah.
So I clicked on their email and it was legit at pornhub.com in it. And I was like, rah, this is from them. But I was like, and I'd heard they were doing it. And I was like, but I don't remember signing. So either a good Samaritan has signed up for this or they have massively just broken the GDPR rules. I don't know what's going on yet. But either way, I just want to say I deleted the email because I'm trying to live that porn-free life over the last couple of years because it is a problem. So I appreciate what they're doing, but right now I'm good. Maybe I'll come back in a month's time with the trials and then I'm gone, what have I done? But
Yeah.
But for now, I'm okay.
All right, but I'm just saying it's out there. Those 30 days are out there if somebody wants a nice month to help flatten the curve. They want people to stay inside and wash their hands, preferably afterwards.
What does that even look like? That red bit?
Yeah, it looks very phallic, doesn't it?
It's bare phallic, bruv. And they're going, flatten the phallic by going on Pornhub. And that is some good innuendo there.
I like it, man. I mean, I think Pornhub have always been ahead of the curve when it comes to kind of supporting people out there. And the fact that they're giving out some free premium porn, I think it's a good thing, man. Stay at home hub is the vibe right now that we're on. I like it. But but apparently condom sales are going up as well. There's a shortage of condoms on the horizon. Have you heard about this as well?
I haven't. I mean, I don't have that problem in it. I'm at home with my mum. So man has sworn that celibate life in it. I'm not saying it's been forced upon me, but I'm feeling very zen right now. You know what those people? I was thinking about
you're
this.
You're too old to be getting caught knocking one out by your mum, innit? That's embarrassing, innit?
Bruv, and I can't be having it like, what, watching porn with these on? Bruv, what am I? So that the sound doesn't bleed out.
Silent strokes.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know how loud I'm being.
Make for some awkward breakfast, come downstairs the next day, man. Your mum's looking at you like, fucking dickhead.
I know what you
mean. Yeah, sorry, you were saying, mate.
I had that thought, like, you know those smug people that every, like, there's always, like, one or two of your friends that in January, like, for the New Year's resolution, they'd be like, you know what, I've had a mad year, yeah, and I'm feeling a bit heartbroken. I think I'm going to be celibate this year. And you're like, you're not going to manage that, innit? Bro, those people are bare smug right now. Bare smug right now, going, was I not going to manage it? Was I not going to manage it? I think I'm going to manage it fine. Crazy. It's crazy.
I've not even spoken to another woman for the last 60 days, bruv. What are you talking about? I've done it. And there are some people, wow. Do you know what? Forget the baby boom that's going to happen, that people are saying is happening now. When people finally get out and bruv, they get on these streets they go to clubs and bars and drink, bruv,
it's going to be a combat, isn't it, bruv? It is going to be insane.
It's going to be absolutely, I mean, lube's going to be, forget toilet roll, lube's going to be sold out now. Condoms are going to be sold out.
Are you seeing someone?
Yes, I'm taken, bruv. I'm not going to be part of this.
No, but I'm saying, like, let's not pretend like man's not already arranging the post-corona party, innit?
Smash!
And then just going, so I've got the Monday here, Tuesday in Nottingham, Wednesday in Glasgow,
Oh, yeah, the post-corona smash is going to be insane, bruv. There's going to be a lot of smashing going on.
There's going to be a lot of gum clinic visits in a month after post-corona.
There's going to be like, flatten the curve, please use a condom.
Yeah.
There's going to be the Prime Minister's going to give us an address and be like, look, guys, we just want to say well done for staying at home, but now you need to wear a condom because the gum clinics are becoming just inundated with clap. It's gonna be a new kind of clap. It's gonna be clap 2020, bruv.
Clap 19 is gonna go round. Clap 19.
Well, we're still waiting to see if clap 19 becomes an actual thing. I mean, we were joking about it, but boy, it's feasible, isn't it? After looking at what 2020 has thrown at us. Also had Russell Kane on the show, episode 356. Everybody's dealing with the COVID situation in different ways. I asked Russell how he was.
Well, I've thrown myself into work massively. The first day of lockdown, I just hit the phones. I scheduled lots of things. And my thinking was this. Marcus, can I just... The tumble dryer is really bugging me. Can I close you?
please, we can start again and we can leave that in because that is what it's like at the moment.
No, because you probably want to know. Baker.
This is what it's like now.
That is the noise of a Beko 1000 spin and tumble combined cycle. The nerds are now jacking off hearing that in the background. So anyway,
oh my gosh, what's the RPM?
I decided that I was going to throw myself straight in, and I knew the way the market was going to go, if you like, for us, because if you're a live performer, it's obviously everything's going to drift onto virtual. Now, I got a little bit lucky in that 3 or 4 years ago, I started doing these things called canings, which they're somewhere in between just doing a funny monologue and doing stand-up on your own in the bedroom. Now, doing stand-up on your own in the bedroom and trying to be funny with no audience is cringe. There's no way around it. But blogging and just talking on YouTube, everyone's used to seeing. So I wondered whether there was something halfway in between where I've got the body language of stand-up, but the timing slightly different. Incredibly difficult. No one's got a natural talent for it. The only way you could do it is learn it by getting it wrong for about 2 years. Well, what, aren't I the lucky little bastard that I just happen to have practiced a format I need? There's no other way of getting stand-up out there. And so I've just jumped in doing two of those a week, topical stand-ups all about the lockdown, and really throwing myself into it.
Yeah, man, and you're nailing it. Like, how do you do them? Because they're proper, like, bam, 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 bam. You smash the jokes out. So, like, do you just get on and rant? And how does it turn from what you do to?
So
what
I try, when I do a live tour day before I go into, like, the tour shows, like, say 2 hours total with an interval, but only about 90 minutes of that is whatever the show's about that year. My dad, my life, my wife, whatever. And the first 10 minutes is always me improvising. So I've got like that weird, slightly trippy, something not wired right in my brain. As long as the adrenaline's pumping and there's audience there, I can do that sort of Ross Nobley stuff, but high energy in my own style. So my brain, for whatever egotistical, pathetic, narcissistic reason, as soon as I'm filming myself in my bedroom with no one watching, my brain goes into audience mode. I don't know why. Thank God it does. So what I do is I write a few bullet points. Say I'm going to talk about the soldier that walked around his garden. I'm going to talk about people that choose to sunbathe over not get coronavirus. And I'm going to talk about people that wear gloves to go to the supermarket. That's all I'll start with. Three bullets and maybe a couple of silly things I've thought of in the shower while I'm getting ready or whatever.
Yeah.
Then I'll just start improvising. So I will rant to the camera for 10 minutes, say 12 minutes, 13 minutes max. So the raw footage you would see is me sort of stood around going, oh, I know, I'll do an impression of the soldier over here, and then do a walk of the soldier, then I'll do a silly face, then I'll think of something funny to say. And then I'll run downstairs, stick it on the laptop, and cut it down to, well, it used to be 3 or 4 minutes, but now I'm doing sort of 6, 7, 8 minute videos now.
Oh, mate, yeah, they're really long. I mean, one of them even made a kind of a caning, made an appearance on BBC last night, really. I feel like that's what it was.
I know. And so that's what's happened is, sorry, 1 second, Mark, sorry.
You know what, while Russell takes care of this, I just want to say this is indicative of all Zoom conversations and all online conversations now. Everyone's juggling, doing stuff at the moment. Before we even today, Russell was doing some business. I was like, oh, Russell, don't mind if I just send a quick email, do you? Just got 30 seconds.
It's very unusual, but just so listeners know what's happening, it's the most Essex, I hate stereotypes, sadly, my mate's flogging a car on my behalf and I've got to check the money's credited. I mean, chassis number, blow talks your chassis number off. No, so what's happened is, I mean, I'm always busy and always working anyway, and I'm always doing the usual stuff, 8 out of 10 cats, this, that, and the other. But the reason, I suppose, I'm getting my phones ringing slightly louder than I would have expected with everything that's going on is I've got a reputation for being able, people know that format works. So for something like Big Night In, which at the time you and I were speaking, it was on last night, they know I'm a safe bet. I'm going to be able to polish that off in, you know, and so I just dropped them a little 30-second funny video. And I've got a few more things coming on as well, one on Channel 4, one on BBC 2. Yeah. It's not like you can earn money from it, but it's just keeping the content ticking over.
You did it for a good cause. Also, I've got a little clip of it here. I think you kind of used it as an excuse to diss someone in your household.
There are two types of people on lockdown, and we're living with each other. There's my team, the meerkats, with springs attached to our bodies, bouncing up and down, doing the Joe Wicks workout every day, running up and down the stairs, doing 4 loads of washing, planning, tidying, organising. And then there's the other group, the people we live with. Laid back, did Buddhism when they were 17. Don't let things stress you. Here's a sock to mess up your day. Your sock dropping, didn't pick up butter from the shop, dirty toilet idiots.
Who was that directed at, Russell?
And that is the cleaned up version of that joke, as you can imagine. But that is paradoxically, I think, I don't know what your domestic setup is. I can't remember, Mark. You married?
Yeah. Oh, I'm taken. Not married, but yeah, taken. Yeah.
Taken, claimed. And but in my experiences, most relationships have sort of a tigger and a tortoise, mostly. And the more opposite they are, the more it seems to work, but the more they wind each other up.
Yeah.
So, you know, Lindsay just doesn't get angry or bothered. And again, we've missed a flight. It doesn't matter. We can have a holiday at the airport. She's one of those. Whereas I'm like got a vein bulging out the side of my head. If, you know, I'm 2 minutes late getting out of bed, we made a schedule. It's 7:32. Yeah. But we sort of, we give each other something we need, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, man. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think there needs to be a bit of balance. If you're both the clean freaks, I think it ends up being jarring. Yeah. One of you jars the other because it becomes like a who's cleanest competition. No, I'm more OCD Absolutely. Than you. And if you got two filthy, yeah, go on.
Yeah, you need someone needs to place the rocket up the bum, and someone needs to receive the rocket.
Someone so you needs need a giver and a
receiver.
Yeah, yeah.
So you need a giver and a receiver. So you're either the one that needs the rocket up the arse, or you're the one lighting the rocket.
Like all relationships. Yeah, like all relationships.
Yeah.
So you're managing to churn out your content and you're managing to really stay on top of things. I mean, what is your tech set up at the moment? Because I find everyone's got to do stuff from home. So you've got to be quite clever with the way that you get your content out. How are you making stuff?
I get, including last night, a lot of messages from people who are quite sort of far on in the business game. What camera are you using, man? I want to treat myself. What's your tech? Your videos look so sharp. Didn't look sharp on telly last night, obviously, because it's been blown up to 25 frames per second for TV. But if you look on my channel, people think I'm using some DSLR camera or some big setup with lighting. All I do, I mean, is literally a window like this. Sometimes this window, it's now covered in historical figures where I'm pretending to homeschool. I literally put a sat-nav holder, boom, on the window. I put my iPhone X, not the latest one, not the posh one, selfie camera, not even the better flip camera, into the sat-nav, and I speak into my landscaped phone.
Natural light.
A sat-nav holder on a window. That is it.
No mic.
And there, so No mic. The mic from the phone, and then when I'm done, I airdrop it onto my MacBook, and I use the built-in editing software iMovie to cut it. So the answer to the question is that that's a lot of people asking, why did you decide to do jump cuts? It's so funny the way you teleport around the screen. Does anyone know another way I could record it? Because if I'm using one camera, I don't really have much choice. I'm not going to nail one take in like 8 minutes. So I have to teleport. So I didn't put jump cuts in because I think they're hilarious. They were invented in about 1930 by a French film director. It's hardly innovative. I put them in because I've got no choice. I've got one camera. So I've turned a negative into a positive. And the original concept 4 years ago was if I just do like a funny face or I appear with my bum sticking out, it'll be like a funny, surreal thing. And it allows me to appear somewhere else to finish a thought. So this thing I've done to cover up my dearth of equipment has turned into a feature that people think I'm doing on purpose because I'm this high energy crazy guy. But in fact, it was like a lot of inventions, like Blu-Tack being a leftover in a factory, like Marmite being the leftover in a yeast factory. Someone's looked at some leftovers and gone, my God, maybe this is part of the product.
Yeah. And because it's so easy to do, I guess that's why you're able to do it when you're out and about, because over the years I've seen you in different locations. I mean, you have got your spot, your spot, which kind of looks like a bedroom maybe, or room that you use. But yeah, all your dressing rooms that you're in, you just slap it up and crack on the same style.
It comes down to, if you're trying to film stuff with your own cat and all you've got is just your bog standard iPhone camera, and you've got to use the selfie front camera, because otherwise how can you check your frame? Although I do know a hack for that. Remind me to give you that in a sec.
Yeah.
Then you need light. If you don't have camera, then you need light. And the other thing to be wary of, if someone's listening to this and think, well, I do want to, you know, imagine what I could achieve with a really great Canon E60 or something. The thing to be very wary of, is they are made for amazing photos or for you sat there doing a video. As soon as you move, that auto lens takes a second to go and find you. So what happens is you sit down to the editing suite and you start a thought over to the right side of frame, and it's some hilarious sentence comes out of your mouth and you're soft, and it takes a second for that to focus. So although the camera is quality, and you'll be able to spot the ones on my official Russell Kane Facebook page where I've used my posh camera, look a different world of clarity, filming is a headache. Because if I'm going, the thing about slow people is, and I want to jump over here and go, they drag their heels around the house. I've got to pause, focus, deliver line. And the timing is never the same as when I've run across, bounced off the bed and hit it in the breath I want to hit it. So that's the note of caution I would say for people. Now, the hack I mentioned how can we use a phone to film ourselves, particularly during lockdown? And if we want to use the other side of the phone where the camera is slightly higher quality, how can we do that and see ourselves in frame? Because you might end up cutting your hair off. Yeah. Well, if you're like a depressing majority of us, an iPhone and MacBook user, this is the hack I know. So obviously it's is that called a lightning cable, Marcus? That one
yeah,
there?
Yeah, that
lightning.
Is, yeah.
Yeah. So what you obviously you've got a lightning cable in the bottom of your phone, but your laptop has got a USB-C charger. So what you need a USB-C to lightning cable. It's about £4 on Amazon. Get it delivered, go USB-C to lightning, and go into QuickTime. In QuickTime, change the input camera to your phone. Your laptop then becomes a monitor. So you stick your phone in your tripod above your laptop, and you can just, obviously you can't look down at your own face, but you can see roughly that you're in frame, enabling you to use the reverse camera, which some websites want, or you might want to try. Nice. So there's a little hack there.
Nice. How'd you find
took
that
me a out? Long while to find that out, a long while, a lot of digging. So I put that out there to help people use that reverse camera, because there's only so much you can get out of the selfie camera on these phones, you see.
Yeah, I love it, man. And I do like the fact that you keep it like a real simple setup, so you can just focus on the content, because you do quite a lot of these, man. And I feel like there's a lot to talk about now with Corona every single day, but you've been doing it for 3 years. So the fact that you can just slap the camera up and then all you have to focus on is just getting your content out must be quite relaxing. It means that you've not got to fart around setting up, because, you know, when you're doing like your proper TV stuff and even when you're doing your live shows, there's a lot of tech setup, isn't there, to do?
It's liberating on two levels. One, I mean, for example, you might not even remember this, but about 2 or 3 years ago, a United Airlines passenger was dragged off of an aeroplane. I think he was like a Thai, Chinese, Indonesian guy. Do you remember? He was dragged off kicking and screaming and abused by the staff. And it was a massive scandal. And we were literally getting ready to go out for dinner, me, Lindsay and Minna, that's my daughter. And I knew that there was a topical program recording that day in London of I Got News to You that I wasn't on that week. I thought they're going to get in first with the jokes. By the time my wife and daughter had got everything sorted and were in the car, I on the window, improvised for 8 minutes, knowing that when I get back, I can edit that. I could still enjoy my wine at dinner. Otherwise, I wouldn't have been able to have a drink at dinner because my brain switches off. And so I hit that before the baby was strapped into the car seat. Came back home, my 8 minutes was there, cut it, dropped it the next morning. I was ahead of a Vibrant News for You, Mock of the Week, all these people. So I got in because I knew some of the jokes were quite obvious that I was doing, meaning the other program's probably going to do them as well. So I thought, bang, get in first. So it's liberating in a tech sense, the ease of setup, but it's liberating in the reactive sense as well.
Yeah.
In that the marching captain, Tom, who generated the unbelievable 20 million.
What a guy.
I know, I have to shame everyone, but I thought I need to get that content out Friday lunchtime. So I wouldn't normally drop on Friday 1 PM because your peak traffic's 8-9 PM at the moment. But I thought get in at 1 PM that way no one can say that I've copied Ian Hislop or Jimmy Carr or you know, or whoever's or Paul Merton, whoever's on that night. I get him first. So it's liberating in that sense. If I can get to 300,000 views by then, that's good. And it's also when I appear on those programs, I love doing them. I love going on Graham Norton or Loose Women or anything. I'm just a chatterbox. I love being on anything. But if you see me on the Graham Norton couch being hilariously funny, you've still got to translate, oh, he's quite funny when he's bantering, but is he funny when he's on stage with a microphone? Whereas there's less translation between me monologuing down a webcam than there is with me sat on a couch.
Yeah.
So I don't mean to be crude or crass, but it's a business at the end of the day. There's more conversion to people coming to the theatre when I do these than if I appear on a freaking 2 million people watching chat show. I mean, it's unbelievable, but it's the truth.
Isn't it interesting how much Russell Cain understands about interactive times, how content works, and how he kind of uses that to just get his content to maximum amounts of people. Interesting. Another gentleman we had that does a slightly different style of comedy was Jonathan Pye. He was on episode 357, which dropped in late April. And he makes very interesting videos where he pretends to be a reporter. And what we see from Jonathan Pye is the bit that the reporter does after recording has stopped, and he can say exactly what he wants. And there's a very cool clip out there on the internet which explains where Jonathan Pye, or the idea for Jonathan Pye, came from. I'm going to play it right at the start of this, and then Jonathan himself is going to explain what exactly is going on here.
That's not Anne Robinson, is it? Jesus Christ.
She's even got new tits.
Can you just explain that, to us what that is?
That is Peter Sissons, may rest in peace.
Yeah, R.I.P.
This is the birth of Pye, really. He's sat in the 6 o'clock news room studio. They've clearly gone to the sport or the weather. He's just watching the telly like that. And it's Anne Robertson, and he just looks at her and just goes, look at that. She's even got new tits. This is Peter Sissons, right? And clearly, he's back on air in 30 seconds. There used to be this show called It'll Be All Right on the Night, which was all bloopers, right? And now we kind of bloopers, they're everywhere, right? But it used to be on once every sort of 6 months when I was growing up. And it was like, you know, mistakes from the Coronation Street set or this, that and the other. And it was a real big thing because you never really got to see behind the scenes of things. But it was always the newsreaders that were the ones that always stuck in mind. Even from a really young age, there was this there was a newsreader called Colin Baker, and he's outside Westminster or something, and it's pissing with rain. And he's just there going, well, Colin Baker, BBC News, pissed off, wife, two kids, thoroughly pissed off. And he's just drenched in rain. And I always remember that one as well. But Peter Sissons, that is Jonathan Pye, essentially. That is the birth of it. And I'd had this character in my mind for ages based on this sort of Peter Sissons moment. It was never supposed to be political. It was always supposed to be silly little vignettes of what do these newsreaders say as soon as they're off air? Because it's a real prescribed way of speaking, broadcasting, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, if you're a Radio 1 disc jockey, you still talk like that. They don't talk like that. Do you know what I mean? But if you're reading the news, you talk like this, blah, blah, blah. And by virtue of that, the minute the producer goes cut and you go, oh, right, who's for a pint? You know,
you can really
get that flip, you know. So that was the genesis of Pye. I've been an out-of-work actor for ages. No one had given me any work for years. And so I just went out with my camera and shot these little things. And a career of sorts was born. Maybe.
So was it literally just you throwing a camera up on sticks, having a suit on, putting a fake earpiece in, holding a mic, press and record yourself, and then just going?
Yeah. I mean, essentially. And that is essentially exactly what still happens, you know? I mean, sometimes I'm out on my own and you press record and you just hope that and then you have to watch it back. And you know, it's pretty lo-fi, really. Yeah. And I suppose in a way that's the genius of it. But that is the essence of it, and that's why I suppose it was successful. I can just get on my bike and put up sticks and record something, get it out within 10 minutes, you know. And it's the live shows are the things that sort of elevate it, I suppose, beyond just sort of, you know, a YouTuber, I suppose.
If I'm honest, that's been an ongoing theme through people that I've spoken to who are still creating content during lockdown, is how do you do it? And all the people that have had the most lo-fi techniques are the people that have been able to carry on unaffected. So again, Russell was on the last episode. I use him as an example because I literally spoke to him the other day. I think his videos, he just puts his car in a car mount and then sticks it onto a window. No microphone or anything. Whereas if you were somebody else, like if you or him or he had to have, you know, two cameramen, some lighting and stuff, you'd be stuffed now because you can't, you literally can't do anything because you haven't put your team together.
I mean, oddly, the lockdown series that I'm doing is oddly technically really tough because I'm editing, right? Normally I do everything in one take and you chop and then that's it. But this, I've got to sort of put it together. And from a writing point of view, it's much more complex because with each one, I want there to be sort of a beginning, middle and end, you know, like a satisfactory episode, if you see what I mean. Whereas the 3-minute rants, it's a rant.
Yeah.
Punch, 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 off you go. Whereas this, you do want to develop that character each time.
So it's weirdly more complicated having to edit all of it together into something that's a bit more satisfying, if you see what I mean. But yeah, no, I think, yeah, go on, sorry.
No, no, carry on.
I've lost my thread.
Sorry about that. I'll tell you what we've got. We've got a clip of Pisolation. We'll drop that for you then. We can give everyone a little taste of what it's like.
I always thought the end of the world was going to be like zombies and shit. Instead, it's a shortage of surgical gloves and the pubs are closed. And tens of thousands of preventable deaths, of course, and a global recession. The world is on its knees. And yet I spent 2 hours on Tuesday pairing socks.
There we go. I can relate to that so much, so much. I did a sock count the other day, actually. I'm not going to lie. I did a sock count. 24 pairs of socks that are in pristine condition. Yeah. Another 12 that are mediocre. And then 5 had to go in the bin. There we go.
I did a sock draw. And the amount of, I got rid of a lot of it. So there are positives.
Yeah, there is. Yeah. But
Yeah,
that's a little being sample of Pisolation. So you kind of like, you can hear like you are editing bits together. There is story in it as well. And I think it comes across really nice. It's nice to see another angle of Pi, something that you can kind of look forward to when the live shows come back. So there you go. That was Tom Walker, aka Jonathan Pi. And I did actually say in that episode, this is not one of the things that I'm the happiest about being right about, is we spoke about how we thought that a lot of the tours that were being kind of cancelled and set up for October 2020, I was saying, well, I'm not sure if things are going to be sorted by then. And unfortunately, I'm right in that. So I really hope that all of these comedians and live shows can get their shows out in 2021 at some point. And we, oh my gosh, as an audience, we're going to be treated to so much choice and so many live shows. So yeah, we need to get out there, spend some dollar on seeing some live shows when we eventually are allowed to. Here's hoping that happens in 2021. Anyway, before we wrap up this episode, why don't we have one more great interview, which is Big Zoo. Big Zoo is actually a grime artist from West London, but he created a massive following creating content around food that he likes to make. And that ended up in him working with Dave to create a show called Big Zoo Eats. Let's hear more about that from episode 362.
Yeah, I definitely do cook a lot. Like, I live with my mum and my little brother, and there's definitely days where my mum can't bother to cook, and she's chilling. She knows I'll go in the kitchen. I don't have to go buy no ingredients. I'll just see what's in the house and start flexing. And now I'm kind of like, I'm definitely getting into my bag in terms of cooking. I'm definitely like learning, because I've learned cooking is all about patience. And, I'm learning how to like make things from scratch. Before, I never used to appreciate it. I used to think, let me just put that Uncle Ben's rice in the microwave. Let me just put that jar of tomato sauce on top. You know what I mean? Whereas now it's like, I'm learning. Yeah. Let me take time.
Brother, I can't lie though. Just to quickly cut in for a second. Yeah, I totally agree with you. And I 100% know that the rice that I make, especially when it's a jollof rice, you can't get that out of a bag. But Uncle Ben's is stepping up his game, bruv. That was the only rice I could get. So when I went to the supermarket, that was the only rice I could get. And I got like a garlic rice. I got a Mexican rice. These were the only bags left. There were like 4 bags left. And I had them. They're the 2-minute in the microwave ones. Bruv, not going to lie. Doing all right.
My G, That's the thing. It can work. It can definitely work. Like, even when you make, like, sometimes when I make a fried rice back in the day, I used to use that. Like, I couldn't be bothered to, like, you know what I'm saying, boil a rice and then add it into a fried rice. It definitely works. But I think the more I've, like, done cooking, the more I've learned to appreciate the process.
100%.
Like, even if it's, like, 1% different level of flavor, like, it's like, I think cooking as well, sometimes it's therapeutic, man. You have your long day, you're chilling, and now you just focus on, because you know what's funny, you'll put hours into making a dish and it'll get eaten in 3 minutes. What's so funny about cooking. You'll put hours of effort into cooking and then it'll get nyammed in like 2 minutes, but the faster it gets eaten, the better the feeling is, because you know that it was good food, you know?
So, yeah, it's an actual emotional offering, isn't it? You understand that when you start cooking for other people, when you lay it down, if you see everybody look at it like, oh, then it hits you, doesn't it? But if everyone smashes it and goes, yeah, have you got any more? You're like, yeah.
It was worth them 4 hours of sweating in the kitchen.
Exactly. So what's your favourite thing to cook at the moment? Like, when you get in the kitchen, let's imagine that the supermarkets aren't there. You've got your favourite ingredients. What are you whipping up for us?
I mean, everyone cusses me because it's my classic dish. I've always loved a lasagna. Lasagna is my number one, man. I just love how it's nice tomorrow. You know, it's something you can put in the fridge, eat tomorrow, and it's still buff. Mm. So none of it gets wasted. And
with LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found. That project manager I could never seem to hire? And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I make the white sauce from scratch, and that's like one of my specialities, making a bechamel, which is like a cheese sauce. Well, bechamel is not a cheese sauce. When you add cheese, it becomes a cheese sauce. So it's just like a white sauce. Yeah. Come on, I'm a chef. I want to go away there. Let me go away, chef. You know what I'm saying? And then making the meat sauce as well. Before, I used to use like Don Mio and minced meat, but then I learned how to make a tomato sauce from scratch, which is very easy. It's just literally like cooking down some onions and adding chopped tomatoes and tomato paste and letting it cook down for like an hour. And that's how you get real rich tomato flavor, because like I said, you can add a Don Mio. It doesn't matter. If that's what you like, that's what you like. But when you make your own tomato sauce from scratch and you use just a little cheap ingredients to make something that man can shop in a shop for £15, you know? So I think lasagna is one of my favorite things, because as well, when you finish it in the oven, you got to let it set. And then when you know, boom, when you chop up them, when you slice and dice it, people want the biggest slice. And that's what man always get arguments over. I want that. Let me get that corner. The one that's got the bread with the cheese.
I like the corner. Yeah. I'm always like the corner. I've got to have the corner, Z, because it's got the little crispy bit. Oh, yes.
I always worry for that corner. But like making a lasagna, that's definitely up there. And a roast. I love making a roast. I think roast is one of the most simple things in the world. If someone says they can't cook, tell them make a roast. Because all you got to do is chop some potatoes, chop some carrots, pull it in a tray, get a chicken, pull it in a tray, season it. Make sure you season it. Yeah? Make sure you season it. Don't just put salt and pepper. Yeah? There's other things you could put. Paprika, chili powder, garlic powder. You could put all-purpose. I like Maggi Cube. You know, you can put whatever you want on there. Just make sure you give it some love and flavor. Squeeze some lemon on top. Put some herbs, you know. All these little touches. You pull it in the oven for 2 hours, mate, and you'll never go Nando's again. But big up Nando's.
Yeah, you know what? To be fair, Nando's tastes all right for me as well. Like, I can't lie. But when you make it at home, it's a totally different vibe. But that's all closed now, so people can't go to restaurants. It's like going to the restaurant. When did I last go to a restaurant? It was probably 3.5 weeks ago now. So now people are cooking from home. So I think more than ever, due to timing, your show is going to be more relevant than it was before. Do you know what I mean? Because people need to cook from home. They want to see new ways to cook. And again, it's not like you're being Jamie Oliver or Heston. You're not in some kitchen where they've got all this funky tech and fresh stuff. You're kind of using what's in the food truck and you're making food for people that are out and about and they have specific needs. You're like, okay, cool. What can I whip together for you? That's sick.
Yeah, man. The timing is weird. The timing is weird. Obviously, it's a catch 22. We definitely would have loved to be able to go on the road and do some serious promotion, but
take the food truck on the road. Yeah, I don't like that.
Yeah, that was like the main. That would have been sick if I could have just pulled up a man in a food truck. Like, he wants some food, but sick. You know, hopefully we get a series two. Hopefully. But yeah, like you said, people are home, and obviously, I don't wish people to stay in self-isolation. I don't wish people to stay in their house. But, you know, if there was ever a time for people to watch a cooking program, where especially where I'm out and about exploring the world and trying to bring ingredients to you and dishes to you, I think it's definitely a good time for people to take in the hard work that me and my brothers have done. And the whole crew. Big up the camera crew. Big up the editors. Big up all the people that run all the logistics. Got all the higher-ups that do all the, you know, signing off the paperwork, because this has made me learn that it's a process that everyone has to come together. Do you know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah, man. You totally get the credits now, don't you? Like, all of the people that have to put their work in.
Hey, I used to turn off the program at that point still. I'll be like, yeah, on to the next. But now I've definitely learned to appreciate all them names that pop up at the end. And what was sick is when we watched like a couple of the final versions, watching the credits and seeing the names come up, like I'm going to see the cameraman name come up and be like, bop, 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 bop. Then you'll see like the line producer. And he'll be like, yeah, 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 yeah. Like, you know what I'm saying? So it's like being able to connect to these people and then seeing them get their, like their gratification from the program.
Yeah.
Then, like, because they're not on the camera. All you ever see when you watch a program is the main guy. You see the main guy and you see the extras and you see the boom, boom, boom. You don't ever see the person that's holding this big camera on their shoulder. You don't ever see the editor that's in the room going through hundreds of hours of footage. You don't see the line producer who has to actually pattern up every single thing to make it run smoothly. You don't see that. So I've definitely learned to appreciate who I'm working with and the effort that people put in to make this happen, because you're going to see Big Zoo on the face of it, but this was a bag of people that had to come together to make this work, and I'm very proud of everyone.
What a nice guy. That was Big Zoo joining us on episode 362 of How to Kill an Hour. I've been Marcus Bronzy. This has been part one of our best interviews from 2020. Because, boy, we've had a lot of great interviews. Coming up in the next episode, which will be dropping next week, we got Ramesh Ranganathan. We got Shaggy. That's right. We got Munya Chihuahua. We got Bilal Zafar. And we've also got George the Poet, Ludwig Göransson, and some mad freestyle rapping that, you know, it's just so nice. We had to throw in there twice. Anyway, this has been How to Kill an Hour. I've been Marcus Bronzy. Thank you for joining us throughout 2020. We have got more gifts for you next week. In the meantime, stay blessed.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.